Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Vicor earnings results for the fourth quarter and year ended December 31st, 2013 conference call. My name is Esteban, and I will be your operator for today. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If at any time you require operator assistance, please press star followed by zero, and an operator will be happy to assist you. I would now like to introduce your hosts for today. James Sims, CFO of Vicor Corporation, and Dr. Patrizio Vinciarelli, CEO of Vicor Corporation. Please proceed.
Thank you, Esteban. Good afternoon and welcome to Vicor's conference call for the fourth quarter and full year ended December 31st, 2013. I'm Jamie Sims, CFO, and with me here in Andover is Patrizio Vinciarelli, CEO, and Dick Nagel, Chief Accounting Officer, or CAO. Today we issued a press release summarizing our financial results for the fourth quarter and full year. This press release is available on the investor page of our website, www.vicorpower.com. We have also filed a Form 8K with the Securities and Exchange Commission in association with issuing this press release. I remind listeners this conference call is being recorded and is the copyrighted property of Vicor Corporation. I also remind you various remarks we may make during this call may constitute forward-looking statements for purposes of the Safe Harbor provisions under the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Our forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to differ materially from those explicitly set forth or implied in our statements. Such risks and uncertainties are discussed in our most recent Forms 10-K and 10-Q filed with the SEC. Please note the information provided during this conference call is accurate only as of the date of the call. Vicor undertakes no obligation to update any of the statements made during this call, and you should not rely upon them after the conclusion of the call. A replay of the call will be available beginning at midnight tonight through March 28, 2014. The replay dial-in number is 888-286-8010, and the listener passcode is 8875-9524. In addition, a webcast replay of the conference call will be available on the investor relations page of our website beginning shortly upon its conclusion. I'll start this evening's call with a review of our financial performance for the fourth quarter and full year, and Patrizio will follow with his comments, after which we will take your questions. As set forth in this afternoon's press release, Vicor reported a net loss for the fourth quarter of $13.1 million, representing a net loss of 34 cents per share, compared to a net loss of $932,000, or 2 cents per share, for the third quarter of 2013, and a net loss of $4.8 million, or 12 cents per share for the fourth quarter of 2012. For all of 2013, our net loss was $23.6 million, representing a net loss of 60 cents per share, compared to a net loss of $4.1 million, or 10 cents per share for all of 2012. In calculating Q4 EPS, we used 38,539,000 shares as total basic shares, while for the full year calculation, we used 39,196,000, reflecting the influence of a higher Q1 share count prior to the completion of our two tender offers during Q2 of 2013. As noted in today's press release, as well as earlier in the press release of March 6th, we increased the reserve against all remaining net federal deferred tax assets on our balance sheet as of December 31st, by approximately $10.2 million, which has been recorded on our income statement as an increase in our fourth quarter tax provision. The impact of this non-cash increase in our quarterly tax provision was to increase reported Q4 loss per share by approximately 26 cents. The other significant driver of our Q4 loss was a marked increase in legal fees. For the fourth quarter, legal fees on a per-share basis exceeded 6 cents. As such, including the impact of the increase in the allowance against deferred tax assets and the increased legal fees, we operated near break-even for Q4. We had expected to be returning to profitability, perhaps as soon as the fourth quarter, as we had been forecasting a recovery in important markets and geographies that would have contributed to this return to profitability. However, as reflected in our decision to take a full reserve against our deferred tax assets, we realized during the fourth quarter that these markets and geographies were not showing the improvement we had expected. I will address these markets and geographies in a moment, and I will return to our tax position and the decision to fully reserve our deferred tax assets at the end of my remarks. Vicor's consolidated revenue for the fourth quarter of 2013 was essentially unchanged from the third quarter, increasing $167,000, or a third of a percent. The Q4 total of $55.3 million compares to revenue of $50.4 million for the fourth quarter of 2012, representing a year-over-year quarterly increase of 9.6%. For the full year, consolidated revenue declined $19.4 million, or 8.9%. This year-over-year decline largely is attributable to the weakness of certain domestic market segments, notably defense electronics. For example, our custom systems business, which primarily serves military customers, saw a sales decline over 20% for 2013. International revenue rose to a record level of 64% of total revenue for the fourth quarter, up from 61% for the third quarter. We report revenue based on the location of the customer to which our products are shipped. The BBU's exports increased 11% sequentially, reflecting a welcome recovery in Japan shipments and strength in China, while North American quarterly sales declined approximately 12%. This shift in BBU volume toward exports, along with the sustained level of VI chip shipments to Asian contract manufacturers working for our domestic OEM customers, contributed to the record level of international activity for the quarter. Turns revenue, meaning orders booked and shipped within the quarter, declined for the fourth consecutive quarter to approximately 31% of revenue for the fourth quarter, down from 38% for the third quarter, and a peak of 47% for the first quarter of the year, the highest level in recent memory. Generally, a lower turns percentage implies greater visibility of our customers and, in turn, our own forecasts. However, given the weakness of bookings in Q4 and booking activity so far during the first quarter of 2014, we likely will see higher turns levels this quarter. Recognized sell-through revenue for the fourth quarter associated with shipments by our stocking distributors was flat from quarter to quarter at $2.1 million. Consolidated gross profit margin rose slightly on a sequential basis, increasing to 42.4% for Q4 from 41.7% for Q3 and 39.9% for Q4 2012. For all of 2013, our consolidated gross profit margin was 40.9%, down slightly from 41.9% for 2012. Recent variability in our quarterly consolidated gross profit margin is attributable to VI chip volume variances. We are pleased to report VI chip achieved improved gross margins for the fourth quarter, reflecting sustained production of VTM and half PRM modules for data center applications. Consolidated operating expenses rose 11.2% sequentially and 8% on an annual basis, although the annual change reflects severance recorded earlier in 2013. For the fourth quarter, operating expenses included legal fees, excluding legal fees, were up less than 2%. This increase was largely the result of R&D and engineering charges associated with the relatively high number of new products in the final stages of design and qualification. We also experienced increases in certain international sales and marketing costs tied to our new offices in Shanghai, Seoul, and Bangalore, but these costs were largely offset by the benefits of expense reductions associated with the restructuring of certain of our international operations, notably in Europe. Total headcount stood at 1,002 as of December 31, 2013, up from 993 as of September 30th. 1 year ago, total headcount was 1,046. Turning to new orders, fourth quarter bookings declined 18.9% to $46.3 million from $57.1 million for the third quarter. While Q4 bookings were seasonally soft, both here and abroad, much of the decline was attributed to two expected transitions. The first, in Europe, involves changes made during Q4 to our distribution model and the transition of customer relationships to our new distribution partners. The second stems from a transition to our new chip platform, shipments for which we plan to begin later this year, as our second-generation solution for powering Intel processors will utilize a chip-based VTM and a Picor cool power SiP regulator. Our major data center customer has begun planning the transition to the new solution, and in turn, its contract manufacturers have slowed their orders for the first-generation solution and are consuming inventories on hand. As such, we're seeing reduced bookings for the first-generation VI chip solutions so far in Q1 2014, and we're expecting a similar level in Q2, with bookings for the second-generation chip and SiP solution expected to begin in Q2 and accelerate in Q3. One-year backlog fell to $44.7 million from the prior quarter's ending level of $53.9 million, a decline of 17%, again reflecting the weak Q4 bookings. 75% of this backlog was scheduled for shipment during the current quarter. So far this Q1, our daily bookings rate has improved, and we anticipate bookings and backlog ending the current quarter ahead of Q4. Cash flow from operations for the fourth quarter fell to a deficit of $2.4 million, largely due to an unfavorable $2.1 million swing in working capital. Recall the increased deferred tax asset reserve was a non-cash adjustment to our tax provision. Capital expenditures for the quarter increased slightly to $2.2 million, reflecting some of the initial investment in the expansion of our chip production capabilities. We have refined our budgets for 2014 expansion and currently expect the actual dollar investment for the year will be lower than originally expected, in the range of $4 million. We have been successful in repurposing existing resources to meet expected 2014 chip capacity needs. Turning to the performance of our business units, the BRIC business unit, our largest, recorded flat sequential revenue of $42.3 million. This level represents a 2.6 decline from the $43.4 million recorded for Q4 2012. For the year, BBU revenue declined $16.9 million, or 9.4%. These revenue trends reflect continued weak conditions for the BBU in North America and Europe, while Japan has been steady. In contrast, after a brief period of softness earlier in 2013, China showed growth, with rail and industrial applications picking up for the quarter. Other developing markets continue to show impressive growth, with demand across industrial, rail, and communications applications. As has been the case for some time, the BBU continues to experience varying demand for its modules and configurable products. We are hopeful macroeconomic conditions improve at some point, driving demand, but we anticipate real recovery for the BBU will be based on new, highly differentiated solutions enabled by the chip modules Patricio will discuss in a moment. VI Chip's fourth quarter also was largely similar to the third quarter, with revenue increasing $243,000, or 2%. Q4 2013 revenue at $12.2 million was more than twice the level of Q4 2012. For the year, VI Chip recorded revenue of $33.2 million, which was 6% lower than the amount recorded for 2012. For 2013, VI Chip's production recovered during the second half of the year and was largely targeted at the data center market, where our 48-volt factorized power solution has been successfully deployed in high volume. As I stated earlier, we are forecasting a transition during the first half of 2014, with a decline in VI chip shipments anticipated in the second quarter as the transition from VI chip-based solutions to solutions consisting of a chip VTM and a Picor cool power SiP regulator begins for data center and communications customers. We also are forecasting a diversification of customers for chip solutions that will begin in the second half of 2014. However, we may experience lower gross margins in the near term as we will be ramping production of the new chip products initially in lower volumes and therefore absorbing less overhead. Picor has been gaining momentum with its expanding line of cool power SiP point-of-load regulators, with attractive sampling and design activity leading to encouraging new orders. However, meaningful merchant revenue is at least 2 quarters away for PiCore as the volumes associated with the second generation data center solution develop during the second half of 2014. Returning to taxes, for the fourth quarter, our income tax provision was approximately $9.4 million, reflecting the $10.1 million increase for the quarter in our valuation allowance against our remaining federal net deferred tax assets. As I advised last quarter, we were aware then of the possibility the company might need to increase the valuation allowance we apply to deferred tax assets we carry to reflect a conclusion that we more likely than not would not be generating sufficient taxable income to utilize the assets in the foreseeable future. Until the fourth quarter, we had maintained a forecast calling for an earlier ramp in new product volumes, accompanied by an assumed recovery in the North American and European markets. In addition, we had not anticipated the extent to which customers and prospective customers would be reluctant to place orders for bus converter products due to their fear of becoming involved in litigation. These factors, when incorporated into our forecast for 2014, along with our recent consecutive quarterly losses, led us to conclude it would be appropriate for us to fully reserve our federal net deferred tax assets as of year end. As I've stated before, significant management judgment is required in determining whether deferred tax assets will be realized in full or in part. Every quarter, we assess the amount of the valuation allowance offsetting the value of these assets. Elements of this assessment include projected future taxable income, tax planning strategies, scheduled reversals of deferred tax liabilities, if any, and income in the carryback period. When we went through this quarterly exercise for the fourth quarter of the prior year, 2012, we had concluded we would be able to utilize the net value of the federal deferred tax assets carried, but we determined we would not be able to use the state deferred tax assets carried, so we recorded a non-cash charge of approximately $1.5 million, or almost 4 cents a share, to fully reserve the value of these remaining state deferred tax assets. However, in contrast, during the third and fourth quarters of 2010, we recorded non-cash tax benefits of $5.2 million, or 12 cents per share, and $1.2 million, or 3 cents per share, respectively, due to the release of portions of our valuation allowance against deferred tax assets, which markedly increased our reported net income for those 2 quarters. Turning to the consolidated balance sheet, our receivables portfolio remains in excellent shape, with day sales steady at 43 days quarter to quarter. Consolidated inventories quarter to quarter increased 6% due to an increase in year-end inventories within VI Chip. Despite the increase, annualized turnover only declined from 4.0, a recent high point, to 3.95. There were no meaningful changes to reserves. Cash and equivalents stood at $56.3 million at year-end, down from $61.2 million at the end of the third quarter. We also hold investment securities with a par value of $6 million carried on our balance sheet and an estimated value of $4.8 million, representing roughly 80% of par. Turning to our expectations for the first quarter, which is two-thirds over, we are expecting to meet our revenue target of approximately $52 million, which is sequentially lower due to the soft bookings of the fourth quarter. As mentioned a moment ago, we expect bookings will end the first quarter slightly ahead of the prior quarter. Because of the aforementioned transition to the second generation solution, we expect VI chip volumes will decline slightly sequentially, with a consequential impact on gross margin, again due to less overhead absorption. Any improvement in true operating performance likely will be offset by legal fees, which we are expecting will result in another quarterly loss. We expect to consume cash to fund operations and for capital expenditures, but we have sufficient liquidity to meet our needs. While we have many good things to share with you, which Patricio will address, I will conclude my remarks by stating that our return to robust growth and profitability may likely be delayed until at least later this year. Now I'll turn the call over to Patricio.
Thank you, Jamie. As Jamie has described, the fourth quarter was characterized by steady shipments but lower bookings. Volumes fell short of the level we need to leverage our operating model. And putting aside the tax charge, we recorded a loss due to substantial legal fees that we expect to continue until the trial scheduled to take place in 4 months. As I stated in today's press release, fourth quarter results and the non-operational nature of significant influences on these results masked some important progress we made during the quarter with our new product initiatives, notably our chip platform. As I've discussed, Vicor introduced its converter housed-in package, or chip technology, in March 2013 to get acclaim. The design concept, which integrates advanced magnetics, control ASICs, and power semiconductors within high-density interconnect substrates, enables unprecedented power density, conversion efficiency, and thermal performance. With our chip platform, we are enhancing a via chip value proposition. The cost of manufacturing chips is expected to be far less than what it costs to make earlier generation via chips, and the performance of chip modules is far superior. In addition, our chip platform provides us greater flexibility and scalability in manufacturing a wide range of package sizes, much wider than with earlier via chips, thereby allowing for a broader range of products offered and applications served. In short, chip technology is a game changer for Vicor. In December, we released to production our first chip-based product, a 1.2 kilowatt bus converter, and in January, we formally introduced it to the public. We're sampling the device across a range of markets. Called the 6123 BCM, reflecting its dimension of 61 millimeter in length and 23 millimeter in width, and its bus converter function, the module has a DC input range of up to 410 volts and the nominal output of 48 volts. It is based on our SunAPU converter topology, which at over 1 MHz operating frequency ensures fast sensing response and low noise. This module sets best-in-class benchmarks for converter efficiency up to 98% and power density up to nearly 2 kilowatts per cubic inch. Rated for 1200 watts, this product can handle up to 1.5 kilowatts peak power, and for applications requiring larger power levels, a multiplicity of BCMs can easily be used in parallel. The 6123 BCM addresses the rollout of higher voltage DC distribution in data center, datacom, telecom, industrial, and military applications. For some time, we've been emphasizing the benefits of high voltage power distribution, which reduces power consumption, operational costs, and infrastructure investment. High voltage distribution ranges from 270 volts in aerospace applications to 380, 400 volts in data centers to 600 volts and 800 volts for heavy industrial and military equipment. We've been a pioneer in high voltage conversion in all of these market segments. High voltage DC has been identified in numerous studies as the sweet spot of efficient power distribution, as it allows for lower distribution losses and or less bulky copper cabling. It removes complexity by eliminating unnecessary conversion stages and offers an increase in overall power system efficiency. While challenging a well-established standard in any industry can be difficult due to longstanding practices and entrenched vendors, a major obstacle to the adoption of high-voltage power distribution in data centers has been the availability of enabling components, specifically those addressing the large step down from a high-voltage bus to the low voltage necessary for servers, routers, and the like. Traditional DC-DC converter topologies are handicapped by their physical size and lower conversion efficiency, making the implementation of high-voltage distribution a challenge. We targeted our original VIA chips at this market opportunity, but they proved compelling only in less cost-sensitive applications, like supercomputing. However, our 6123 BCM, along with similar products on our roadmaps, provides very high step-down ratios with unmatched levels of efficiency and power density at an attractive price point. One industry analyst wrote in the February issue of Electronic Design that the 6123 BCM represents the missing link necessary to break down the remaining barriers to high voltage distribution in data centers. Given the very high profile of worldwide data center infrastructure to meet the demands of cloud computing and universal mobility, we believe our pioneering position in high voltage distribution has put Vicor in the sweet spot of this exciting market opportunity. We believe our high voltage BCMs, complemented by our POL regulators with Vicor Cool SIPs and the POL current multipliers with chip-based VTMs, give us a highly differentiated competitive advantage in the promising high voltage distribution market. We expect to extend our leadership in this emerging market in the next month or so with the introduction of a 1750-watt bus converter in the same 6123 package. I encourage listeners interested in our technology and product positioning to view our web-based presentations, which describe the considerable advantages of high voltage DC distribution. We're very pleased to have our data center partners participating in these presentations, including HP, Emerson, and Universal Starline. Germany's Fraunhofer Institute is involved as a partner, focusing on high voltage microgrids in commercial buildings and industrial facilities. The U.S. Army also is a participating partner, reflecting the applicability of our high voltage distribution solution to 270-volt distribution and defense applications. Our high voltage BCM roadmap is also applicable to bidirectional battery backup and charging of up to 800 volts in heavy commercial and military equipment, in which high voltage distribution enables hybrid power systems and provides energy-saving features. We're also targeting similar bidirectional applications in renewable energy, where batteries need to be recharged after discharge in a closed loop. This spring, we also plan to release our chip-based DCMs, which are high-voltage, regulated DC-DC converters applicable to a wide range of market end uses. We're planning for our DCM portfolio to grow rapidly with automated specification, design, qualification, test, and data sheet generation tools coming online through 2014 to bring Vicor's mass customization capabilities to the new DCM chip platform. As has been the case with a traditional line of brick modules, customers will soon be able to design online a specific configuration within a broad input range of 12 to 425 volts inputs, with outputs from 12 to 55 volts, and with power levels per module from 50 to 600 watts, and have that product delivered in release status within weeks of request. We believe high-voltage DCM engines, when used in thermally adept packages containing filtering and communications telemetry circuitry, will reinvigorate our traditional brick markets, as these devices will offer market-leading efficiency and power density. These package units are also expected to have broad applicability to high-volume OEM applications for which our traditional bricks have not been cost-effective solutions. Our first samples of these new products have been manufactured, and we're very excited about the prospects for this product line in traditional brick applications within industrial, rail, and aerospace military markets, and new opportunities for us to further penetrate market segments in which we've had limited success with bricks, such as high-volume communications infrastructure. We're also making good progress with our approach to the AC side of the market. Our next major release will be the AC input 400-watt PFM with both 24 and 48-volt outputs, samples of which have already been shown to customers. This new product range will give us a highly differentiated capability in the largest segment of the power conversion market and should generate important cross-selling opportunities. Available in the 6123 chip format, in a new system-level, high-density, thermally adept package, the PFM represents a complete, qualified, certified drop-in solution for a broad range of customers in the telecom, instrumentation, test, and industrial process control and automation segments, and for Vicor, a shorter time to revenue than in the DC-DC segment of the power conversion market. Our existing direct 48-volt to processor solutions also continue to gain adoption, following the success of the Intel VR12 Sandy Bridge x86 solution. We have recently achieved full compliance to Intel's VR12.5 Haswell x86 specification. The VR12.5 compliant 1323 BTM chip and Picor Cool Power Buck Boost SIP regulator are expected to begin shipment in volume in April and will be in greater volume production in the summer. As Jamie indicated, we expect a temporary dip in the volume of shipments to our primary data center customer as their contract manufacturers ship production from Sandy Bridge to Haswell architectures. We're pursuing a broader presence on data center market motherboards with new 48-volt input ZBS buck converters that will allow peripheral rails, notably memory, to be powered directly and efficiently from the 48-volt rail. Vicor powertrains for the 250-watt Xeon Phi graphics processors and new DDR4 memory are in step with Intel's release schedule. We have high hopes these complementary products, which enhance our value proposition for motherboard designers seeking efficiency and smaller powertrain footprints, will allow us to broaden our customers' base with a compelling full solution. Finally, we've been busy enhancing our advanced online tools. In addition to those mentioned above in the context of our DCM rollout, including improvements and expansions of our Power Bench application, adding a whiteboard and simulation tool suite to accelerate high confidence designing activity. We see these online tools as an important element of a competitive strategy. To conclude, we have experienced macroeconomic headwinds that have continued far longer than expected. We've also experienced lower demand than anticipated for bus conversion solutions due to the uncertainty injected into the market by the unfounded claims of a competitor. While our financial performance has lagged and losses have continued, we've never lost sight of our longer-term strategic goal of repositioning Vicor as a highly differentiated vendor of complete, high-performance, cost-effective AC-to-load and high-voltage DC-to-load solutions. Our major product portfolio is nearing completion. We have our front-end sales and market infrastructure in place, and we're confident as ever we will succeed. Despite our enthusiasm for success, challenges remain. As Jamie addressed, we expect to fall short of profitability again this quarter, as any operational improvements are likely to be offset by legal fees. This concludes our prepared remark, and we will now take questions from listeners.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you would like to ask a question, you can press star followed by one on your phone. If you would like to withdraw your question or your question has been answered, you can press star followed by two. Questions will be taken in the order received. Please press star one to begin. Our first question comes from John Dillon with D&B Capital.
Hey, Patrizio and Jamie. I'm wondering if you can comment a little bit more, give us like a little bit more on the color about bookings. It sounds like they're slightly ahead, running slightly ahead of last quarter. And when might you see those start turning up?
So as I mentioned and Jamie mentioned earlier, the temporary depression in bookings has a lot to do with transitional issues in terms of our motherboard solution for Intel processor applications in data centers. We're going to see a ramp with next generation products starting in the middle of the year. I think we're going to see bookings growth in the second half of the year, arising from a variety of VHIP and the PicorSIP opportunities. In the case of VHIP, it is going to be both from new chip products based on the new packaging platform, as well as from older, we might call classic via chips, that have been in a design phase with certain customers over past years, with programs in the defense area and other end markets that are finally coming to fruition later this year into next year. So we expect a broadening of the customer base for VHIP. We expect a broadening of the customer base for PICOR, which should begin to see substantial revenues as the first major program goes into production in the second half of the year. And last but not least, we have our eyes very much focused on the fortune of our brick business unit, where historically we've had products that relied on early generation technology, which had been in need of refreshing for quite some time. With the availability of a range of cheap products, including DCM DC-DC converters, PFM AC-DC converters, BCMs of various kinds, there's going to be, in the near future, an opportunity to, within bricks and power systems, implement what you might call a chip inside strategy that will bring that part of our business to new levels of performance and cost effectiveness.
When do you think that will start, when the BBU will start coming out with new products with the chip inside technology?
They're currently scheduled to start coming out in the June-July timeframe.
Okay. Sounds like a lot's coming together in the June-July timeframe then.
Well, in various ways, on various fronts. I mean, we have ramps of new products being introduced. There's going to be a lot of activity in terms of new product introduction taking place literally over the next several weeks and months with scale-up capabilities of PFMs, bus converters, DCMs. So there's a lot of action that's going on.
In regard to the contract manufacturers, I understand that completely, but I'm wondering, don't they want to put their orders in a little bit early for the new chips so that they can, make sure that they get their deliveries on time, or are you promising them a quick turn? Is that why they're holding back on giving you new orders for that?
Well, so essentially what has happened on the general front is that, last year, as we ramped with our older VHIP-based solution, there was concern with respect to capacity and our ability to step up to, burst demand. We demonstrated that that those capacity concerns are misplaced, and, we performed to expectations with respect to the ability to address growing needs on the VHIP front. And recently, the mindset has shifted from, concern with respect to availability of product to concern about obsolete inventory as a result of transitioning requirements. So I think that's the phase we're in that accounted for softness in booking with VHIP in recent months. I think we're getting through that phase, and with this customers and other VHIP customers, suggested earlier, we're going to see a resumption of significant demand as the year progresses. We are already forecasting VHIP bookings level to set new records in the next 12 months.
Okay, so that's good. So the VI chip should have revenue shipments within the next 12 months?
We are expecting the VI chip bookings to achieve new records in the next 12 months, and that's accounting for the fact that some of the VIA chip business in data center applications is going to be converted to Picor business for Picor SIPs, which obviously tracks from the historical base on which we're building.
That sounds great. And one last question, I'll get back in the queue. Will we see a spike in bookings when the contract manufacturers initially place orders with you then?
That has happened before, and it could happen again. Let's wait and see what happens.
Okay, I'll get back in the queue. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Don McKenna with DB McKenna. Please proceed.
Patricio or Jamie, whoever wants to answer it, on the recent announcements of the new distributor relationships, is that just a change in the way you're trying to get the product on out there, or is it a, you know, where you're getting rid of your internal salespeople and giving it over to the distributors, or is it new territories that you're addressing?
We have been expanding our sales capability in a variety of ways and a variety of avenues. I think, as I'm sure you're aware, we've elevated our performance in terms of the sales and marketing infrastructure in recent years. We've also realigned our strategy in terms of how to address markets in Europe, in Asia, globally, and in the U.S. And that's involved new distribution relationships and novel ways of expanding our market opportunity. So that's very much in keeping with a strategy that we have been focused on to bring about very substantial growth in years to come. And
does that also account for the that change? Does that address to the reserve for severance that I saw on the financials?
That was associated with something very early in 2013.
Yeah, that's a year old, pretty much.
That was a different.
Okay. Right. Second question I had for you on the design tools that you have on, you know, the web-based design tools, is that unique to the industry? And do you measure the usage of it? And can you give us an idea of what kind of usage you are seeing?
Yeah, so we see growing usage, and it is rather unique because Vicor has a unique vision of how the power system marketplace is going to evolve based on a power component methodology. So these capabilities are not ones that you can readily buy because there hasn't been a development that can effectively address the unique tools and capabilities that we need in order to advance our unique power component methodology. So it is something that we've invested in considerably for quite some time. We have a large internal group that has been focused on this development, and they've been able to make great progress in terms of you know, a variety of tools that are highly interdependent, that are architected from the perspective of a customer having a power system need, and that customer being able to, in time, address it with a complement of building blocks that were uniquely equipped to make.
Don, I would add that everybody has selection tools, sophisticated online catalogs that allow you to screen for products based on their capabilities. Many companies from particularly in the semiconductor area have very sophisticated online tools. What we're trying to do is for the power business, as Patricio described it, offer the customer something that really enhances and highlights the advantages of our products and our recommended architectures.
Well, from the perspective of the customer being able to find an optimal solution to their power system needs.
Right.
So it the benefits from, you know, a vision of how to best address power system requirements that is really customer-centric, but leveraging the breadth of capabilities that Vicor uniquely has in terms of, you know, our ability to support any power distribution architecture and doing it with engines and modular power components that have highly differentiated advanced density and efficiency that in many instances is multifold that of the competition, particularly when it comes to density.
Okay. And one last question for you, too, is the R&D right now is running about 20% of revenues. And if I remember right, you said most of that is in-house. Do you expect to maintain that kind of a ratio going forward, or do you see now that you've finally got some of these coming on stream that that expense will decrease?
So the way I like to look at it is both in terms of percentage and absolute dollars. And what I would expect to happen is that the absolute dollars are going to stay relatively constant. Over time, they will grow somewhat, but at a rate far lower than the revenue growth. And as that happens, the percentage that you're referencing
sure.
will come down to a level in the mid-teens, which I think historically would be adequate for us to continue to be the kind of company we are, highly innovative, very focused on you know, advancing the state of the art. Temporarily, it is at a level that is higher than we like. It obviously it hurts us in terms of short-term, you know, financial performance, but we view it as an important investment in the future.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from Jim Bartlett with Bartlett Investors. Please proceed.
Yes, the 48-volt seems to be using a hub in data centers, and the large public cloud vendors seem to be going that way. Could you talk about your advantage in 48-volt, what you offer them, and when you expect to get traction with more than one data center customer?
So to your point, there was an early adopter, a company with a great deal of vision that saw the benefits of a factorized power system solution for Intel processors, primarily Intel processors. As you can imagine, everybody in the industry looks over the shoulders of the respective competitors, and they've all taken notice of the advances that this pioneer has been able to make in terms of efficiency, operating efficiency, which ultimately results in you know, lowering the cost of running a data center, which is obviously a hot button for the industry as a whole. So you should expect, to your point, that others are following. That there's going to be traction with respect to a 48-volt distribution bus, which is a factorized bus driving point-of-load current multipliers for server boards. What that will entail is a broader penetration by our building blocks. Up to this point, it has been limited to powering the processor. But over time, it is going to power processor memory and ancillary loads because, as suggested earlier, we are bringing to market more granular solutions, both in terms of point-of-load current multipliers that can cost-effectively address power requirements and current requirements at a fraction of that of main processor. So well suited to memory rails, and also with the Picor C products, lower power requirements. So we are going to have, as this year progresses, the complement of building blocks to enable a complete solution for a whole power system for a server board, based on a unique capability powered from 48 volt. And the benefits of that are greater density, considerably greater efficiency, several points of efficiency gains that are very meaningful to somebody who owns a data center.
Anyway, you expect attraction in terms of getting some new data center customers to be seen this year?
The activity is gaining momentum. I think if we look at how long it has taken for us to go from concept to fruition with our first key customer in that space, that took a little over a year. It's a fraction of what it took us with high-end servers, which took longer than that, reflecting the reality that in this space things move faster because systems are relatively simpler, lower power levels, and with a faster turnaround in terms of design activity. But when it comes to an infrastructure change in terms of going to 48 volt, there's more than the motherboard design. There's in effect a mindset change that has to take place over some period of time. But we're seeing it happening, and we expect that we're going to start benefiting from it as 2015 comes along.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from John Dillon with D&B Capital.
Hey, Patrizio. How many shifts are you running now?
It depends on which particular version it is, but in some, three shifts. In others, less than that. Just to give you a little bit more sense with respect to capacity utilization, at this time, we're not stretched far from it with respect to via chip capacity, but we're leveraging the lull in activity relating to the transition that I was outlining earlier to expedite completion of a variety of different products which have been in the pipeline. So to some extent, the stars are aligning from that perspective. Because if you were more challenged from a capacity perspective in terms of mass production of particular products, we would have less flexibility with respect to doing as much as we've been able to do of late with respect to competing development of products that have been in the pipeline. So that's been the focus. And because of that, we worked the factory hard, even though mass production requirements have temporarily subsided.
Okay, so you've got the production to go forward then, and you're running three shifts on certain segments, but not all of them.
That's correct.
Okay, and what I think I heard you say just a couple minutes ago is not only will you be powering the processor, but in future servers you'll be powering the memory and also other parts of it, and so that would indicate to me you'll get higher revenue per server. Vicor will achieve higher revenue per server. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the goal. And we think that just the memory rails would bring about essentially a factor of two increase in the value proposition per server board. So that's going to be an important step.
And do you have design wins already for this?
Let me just say that the products that are needed in order to support that capability have been working on the bench. These are smaller chips. Just to give you a little flavor, you've heard earlier reference to a 6123 chip, which is a pretty big chip, probably introduced at 1200 watts, another product about to be introduced at 1750 watts. This is representative of a relatively large chip, not the largest, but a relatively big one. For the server applications we've been referencing, we sample customers with a 1323 chip. So you can infer from 1323 that 13 is a lot smaller than 61. So it's a much smaller chip. We have chips that are a fraction of the 1323 in the works. So the 1323 is well suited for the processor applications. Its capability, DC capability up to about 90 amps, peak capability up to 180 amps. We have smaller chips that are well suited for memory applications that are, you know, in early demonstration capability, and we have even smaller chips in the works. So, and all of this is enabled by our new generation of controllers that Pago has developed in the last several years, which will bring a capability for this type of products in terms of density, granularity at lower power levels, and cost effectiveness to you know, presented levels.
And with this new chip technology and products that you've got, your design wins, are they going up, are they going down, and your design activity, how's that going?
So as I mentioned earlier, we see the customer makeup and the customer differentiation that should land a combination of business goals, which are diversification in the customer base and significant revenue growth, you know, happening in the next 12 months. As mentioned earlier, as we look at the multiplicity of customers that have embraced or are embracing chip-based solutions and SIP solutions, we see just for VHF record bookings and record revenues in the next 12 months.
So your design activity must be way up.
Our design activity is up, yeah.
Yeah, great. And one last question. With the new PFC module, and you're talking about a shorter time to market, when do you expect to see revenue, and what kind of, I mean, are you talking about, like, on a yearly basis, do you expect that to be a significant part of your revenue, a $10 million line, a $5 million line, more or less?
We expect to be very significant. And by the way, without even waiting for the new chip-based, the 6123 chip-based PFM, with our older PFM, which was a double chip, a via chip in the old packaging technology, we've been getting a lot of traction with that, in spite of the fact that in terms of its cost effectiveness and performance is far inferior to the new via chip chip-based product. But with the older via chip, we got in significant design wins, which should result in a major contribution to bookings, not just in terms of the PFM building block, but also suggested earlier in terms of, you know, cross-selling opportunities, because, you know, we view the PFM as, if you will, a conversion stage that will take customers from AC power sources, which are obviously everywhere, to what's been referred to in an earlier question, the 48-volt hub, which is really our hub. I guess if I were to use a airline analogy, I'd be thinking of a hub that serves the particular purpose of a major airline in terms of taking the traffic from a power source such as the AC wall plug to 48 volt, so that we can then take it from 48 volt to the point of load through direct conversion by way of high K-factor current multiplier BTMs. That 48-volt hub is also useful in high-voltage DC distribution because with the recently introduced BCMs taking 400 volts down to 48 volts, again, we can support any power source into the 48-volt hub and from there to the point of load. So the PFMs, going back to the core of your question, play an important role in terms of their own revenue contribution as well as supporting a comprehensive vision of taking customers from any place, meaning any power source, to any other place, meaning any point of load requirement, by way of the 48-volt hub, which is being, which is getting traction more and more in all major electronic markets as the most efficient way of doing business.
This sounds great. Thank you, Patrizio. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We do have
anyone
some
else?
Questions if you'd like to take them. Our next question comes from Don McKenna with DB McKenna.
Guys, we didn't address the litigation at all, and if you could, from two standpoints. One, if my memory serves me right, that the if you were successful, that it would open the door to market potential that might be as large as something like $100 million a year. Could you confirm that? And secondly, can you give us an update on the timeline? Has the court date been set, and so on and so forth?
So we expect to be successful because our products do not infringe any of the asserted claims. The case is going to trial in July, so stay tuned. We expect to have a finding on non-infringement and on that strength reopen a market that has been foreclosed by a good deal of interference from a competitor that has got an agenda that goes beyond the legitimate rights of intellectual property. So that's as much as I can say at this point in time.
Are the products affected? Am I right in remembering that the market, you know, for those kinds of products was somewhere in the $100 million annual level?
Well, so I think that the competitor that we are referencing has, to some extent, managed to, if not kill, impact the golden goose, as it were, in that the market opportunity for IBA has significantly shrunk as a result of you know the threats that have been made to customers that intended to use that power system solution. But they were then, in many instances, compelled to find alternatives, you know, because of the threats and you know the lack of you know viable competition. So here we are. The situation has changed. You know, we have suffered from what has happened unjustly. And we intend to recover in that regard. And, and you know, obviously one of the opportunities is going to be upon a win to access a significant share of that market as it reopens for us.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Jim Bartlett with Bartlett Investors.
Yes, you mentioned in an earlier question the chip inside strategy rolling out for the BBU unit this summer. Given that rollout, when would you expect to start seeing traction in terms of bookings and then revenue from CBU?
So I guess the bad news in that regard is that in our business, you know, given that our products are used within OEM products, there is a design cycle that stands in between the availability of an exciting new product and significant revenues. The good news is that when it comes to this class of products, they fall in terms of gestation period into a different category relative to, let's say, the point of load solutions with PLMs and VTMs that we were discussing earlier in the context of data center applications or other such applications. In that, the BBU type of product opportunities that are chip inside are primarily in the category of front-end systems that bolt on to a chassis or you know, provide functionality within a customer power system, typically outside of the motherboard. And because of that, their time to market tends to be relatively shorter. And so because of that, we anticipate the cycle time from product introduction to revenue to be shorter, but again, to keep our feet on the ground, it is still going to be a significant gestation period. So with products introduced in the middle of this year, we should expect to see revenues next year at a growing rate. And part of that opportunity is going to be to take certain customers that have designed in relatively costly solutions using our earlier VHIP products, the earlier VHIP PFM, taking them to a chip-based solution that will offer them significant you know, cost benefits with performance improvements.
Thank you. Could you also address the traction you're getting with other potential higher-end server companies?
Yes. And what is the question in that regard?
What you had mentioned, I believe, in the last conference call that you that. That you're working with some of these higher-end server companies, and just wondering where you are in that process.
Well, there's been progress, and we expect to see revenues starting in the fall with a chip-based solution. That has been sampled to the customer. The customer is very, very happy with its performance. So we are, as I mentioned earlier, working hard to diversify the customer base because we're all cognizant and mindful of the pitfalls of being dependent on a small customer base. You know, fortunately, with VHIP in the early going, you know, we are an early adopter that dominated our demand, and obviously that was welcome in many respects, but not desirable from others. And we are very much focused on, you know, having a significant mix of customers and applications. And we've been able to make a good deal of progress with respect to that. As I suggested earlier, it is going to come out of other high-end servers. It's going to come out of, and so these are companies that make OEM products that get sold to third parties in the center space. Other big users that, in effect, design and build their own data centers. So that's a different kind of market opportunity, again, for chips. And then defense applications for via chips and chips. So all of these are complementary initiatives that, to a large degree, reuse the same technological foundation of you know, our engines, our control systems, our packaging technology.
You mentioned defense. If I remember correctly, there was the potential for a large radar-based order at some point coming out of.
That's due to go into very significant volume in 2015. I think over $10 million per year.
Starting in 15.
Yeah.
Okay, great. And one final question.
The problems they're having at the Pentagon with budgets.
Could you give us
this one application that, as far as I understand, has not suffered from those constraints?
Future DigiKey distribution numbers, what were they this quarter? And that's progressed, I think, more slowly than originally planned. What is the outlook there?
I think from my visibility, DigiKey has got a magic formula for connecting a supplier such as Vicor with the world at large. It is the go-to place for designers to want to avail themselves of what is possible when it comes to our building blocks, it's a very good fit. I expect we're going to see DigiKey contributing greatly to our ability to penetrate applications and markets worldwide.
And we're working hard to flood it with content.
Yeah.
To make sure that they
and how much was it? Was it a couple million dollars this quarter? You usually get about that number.
Yeah, a couple of million dollars.
Yeah, it was flat. We talked about that in the remarks. It was just
okay.
Quarterly flat.
Flat, okay. Sorry. Okay. Thank you.
If there is one more question, we can take it.
There are no further questions.
Well, thanks a lot, Dan. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
That concludes our conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect. Have a great day.